in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center. While cinema provides entertainment and escape, for many filmmakers and viewers it is a vital portal into the lives of others, a medium of engagement, and a powerful tool for social action. Films will be shown from Thursday, October 6th through Wednesday, November 9th and include the films Familia, Sing Your Song, An African Election, Windfall, and more. Again, that's Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film, presented by the Northwest Film Center, located at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information about the films can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Well, good morning, Per Fogring, and the show is Fight the Empire. And today we're going to talk a little bit about Africa. Upper Volta was a French colony in West Africa that gained its independence in 1960. Sort of independence. His first president was Maurice Yamayogo, who banned political parties and ruled with an iron hand. He lasted 6 years. And then came a kind of a series of army coups. Until finally, in 1983, a young army captain named Thomas Sankara took power. He was quite a bit different from these other previous rulers. He really had a vision of what Africa should be. He was what they call a pan-Africanist, and he's an anti-imperialist. He was also known as Africa's Che Guevara. He was only 33 years old, but he had his vision, and when he took power, he did a lot of things to shake up the French hegemony over that part of Africa. He refused foreign aid, for one thing, and he fought against the West Bank and the International Monetary Fund, and he demanded debt reduction or canceled debts. There is a legal term of odious debt, and that means say the World Bank lends a lot of money to, well, a good example would be Congo, which was then known as Zaire when Mobutu Sese Seko ruled. And so the World Bank, they would lend money to Zaire. Mobutu would take the money and maybe hand out some to his friends and relatives, and he'd put the rest in bank in Switzerland. And then somehow the people of Congo were obligated to repay that debt, although they never got any of the money or any of the benefits. This is known as odious debt. And I think in international law, a country is not required to pay odious debt. Anyway, back to Thomas Sankara. He refused foreign aid, fought the banks and the debt schemes. He moved his country towards self-sufficiency. He fought the landowners, and he promoted small farms. He nationalized land and the mineral wealth. They made a big project fighting desertification. Now, Upper Volta is it's a landlocked nation. It is north of Ghana and the Ivory Coast, so it's kind of bordering the desert region of Sahara and Sahel. And so he fought this desertification with had people planting millions of trees. He had the people also building railroads. They built a railroad practically with their own hands. I saw it on a video. They're laying the track and filling in the gravel with their own hands. He expanded women's rights. He outlawed genital mutilation and forced marriages. He did this way back in the 1980s. He also brought vaccinations to the country. And he, I believe, they had 2.5 million people were vaccinated in 1 week. So that's what Thomas Sankara was doing for his nation. He also changed the country's name. Upper Volta referred to the river that flows through the country. He changed the country's name to Burkina Faso in 1984. Burkina Faso, that's what we know that country by now. It means land of the upright people. Well, Sankara was an upright guy himself. He lived in a modest house. One thing he gave away, or he disposed of all the government's limousines, had his had government officials driving around in little cheap cars. He himself often rode a bicycle. And when he died, he had $350 in the bank. Well, how did he die? He was murdered in 1987 by a former comrade who was one of these rebel military officers. He was murdered, and it was a coup in 1987. Well, the coup was led by a man named Blaise Compaoré, who is in the news now because after ruling for 27 years, Compaoré tried to push through a law allowing him 5 more years, and the people of Burkina Faso rebelled against that. There were uprisings in the streets, and Compaoré finally had to flee. He fled to the Ivory Coast. Compaoré, so that one thing about the name that when Sankara changed the country's name to Burkina Faso, this sort of kept his own name alive. People, every time they say, the people are known as Burkina Bay. And every time they say their country's name, they kind of remember Thomas Sankara, who gave them that name, which is worth repeating, land of the upright people or land of the honest people. And so they kept his memory alive all these years, and they finally forced this basically traitorous comrade Compaoré out of office. And now he had been, Compaoré for years had been a Western ally. When he seized power and had Sankara murdered, he undid all of those reforms. He also fled to the Ivory Coast, which is sort of, that's a country that's kind of in tight with the Western empires. They've been ruled for a long time by Félix Houphouët-Boigny, and who sort of gave Compaoré his protection. So anyway, he fled to the Ivory Coast, and now the army has taken power. First one general and then another officer claimed to be in charge. The latest is this Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida, who is said to be an ally of Blaise Compaoré. He got some training in the United States, which is kind of par for the course. The U.S. is always on the lookout for promising young military officers. We bring them to this country and give them some training and teach them the ropes of how the international system works and how it can benefit them personally. And so Lieutenant Colonel Zita has promised elections. Now, I think the Constitution of Burkina Faso requires elections in 90 days. The UN and the African Union have stepped in, and they are demanding that there be a civilian rule within 2 weeks. Now, I guess civilian rule does not necessarily mean elections. You could put up a civilian ruler and stick him in power, and he can be as bad as the old rulers, but I don't know if that would satisfy the UN or the African Union or not. So for a long time, Burkina Faso, it was considered a stable country under Blaise Compaoré. It had a decent, not a standard of living and a decent economic figures. But the thing is, like, they're very misleading sometimes. You can have a country that has a growing economy, but the growth may all be going to the upper class, because in Burkina Faso, if you went out into the countryside, you see a lot of people living in poverty, especially after Sankara's reforms had been undone. Right now, Burkina Faso is home. There's a U.S. military base there. It is the home of the Joint Special Operations Air Detachment and some kind of a short takeoff operation, and it supports quote high risk activities by elite commando troops. Another interesting thing in Burkina Faso, this year or very recently, the G8. Now, the G8 is the U.S. and Canada plus Europe, also known as the international community, laughingly. Anyway, the G8 came up with a quote, new alliance for food security and nutrition. And this is a so-called landmark initiative to boost agriculture and relieve poverty, but it sort of favors big business to the detriment of small farmers. And one of the things they do is they introduce... They make it easier for people to invest, to buy up land or lease land in Africa. This has been going on for years now, where fertile farmland has been leased by all sorts of outside corporations and nations who don't have much land of their own. And they're all coming into Africa to kind of basically grow their food and ship it home. Well, this G8 initiative has been called a new form of colonialism, and African governments would agree to change their seed laws. Now, I'm sure regular cable listeners have heard Vandana Shiva many times talk about Monsanto and how they control the seed market with genetically altered seeds, which they have a patent on, and which have to be bought new every year. A farmer can't just save seed from a previous crop. So this all ties together. It's very interesting how it all ties together. So one of the things the G8 initiative was to make it easier to foist these kind of seeds on African nations and keep them. So it's like a debt in a way. They're in debt for seed. They can't just do their own seed the way Sankara wanted to do. And so They also favored private investors and changed their tax laws and everything like that. And one of the countries, guess what, that went in on this was Burkina Faso. And they were committed to helping private companies invest in fertilizer. Also said it would improve customs procedures and review its seed law. They're going to change the seed law to make it easier for Monsanto and the other companies to foist their seeds on the people. Other countries that were involved in this initiative were Benin, Ethiopia, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Malawi, Mozambique, and Nigeria, among others. So that is, Africa has been called a sort of the last frontier for agribiz. And this G8 New Alliance was launched by President Obama back in 2012 at a Camp David summit. Now, in the last few years, we've been getting a lot of news about how Obama is really interested and in reviving Africa, making Africa a full-fledged part of the international community. Bill Clinton has also been involved in this. Sort of parenthetically, after all the damage Bill Clinton did to Haiti, now he's turning his attentions to Africa. And this is the product of that. What it means to me, this is what I gather, is that Europe and the West are sort of coming back into Africa to sort of for sustenance. Africa can feed its own people, and it's sort of feeding other people too, if they would have their way. And Europe right now, the European economy is like a sinking ship. And my impression is that they are sort of reviving themselves by sort of sucking wealth out of Africa, which is what colonialism was all about back in the old days. But colonialism was supposed to have ended back in the 50s and 60s. Well, it didn't end. It didn't end in Burkina Faso, because even after that country became independent, it stayed part of the French hegemony for years, until Thomas Sankara took over, and then you see what they did to him. Compaoré was an ally of the French. I just heard on the news the other day that the French helped him escape to Ivory Coast. Saw a very interesting video recently about Sankara. You can find it. It's a YouTube video, and you get on YouTube and I guess type in the name Thomas Sankara, S-A-N-K-A-R-A, and you will find it. It's very interesting. He ran afoul of French President François Mitterrand, who called himself a socialist. I don't know if that would be accurate or not, but he sort of... He did things that irritated Mitterrand, and especially when Mitterrand and political situation in France changed, and Mitterrand was less friendly to Sankara. So anyway, that's the way things are. You're wondering what's going on in Burkina Faso? This is the background. You have a ruler, Blaise Compaoré, who is a kind of a Western stooge, who was forced out of power after 27 years. People still remembered Thomas Sankara. He's been known as sort of Africa's Che Guevara, and he was very friendly with the Cubans. He was also friendly with another ruler at the time in Ghana, Jerry Rawlings, who is still alive. He appears in this video. Really recommend. Try and find it on YouTube. So that's sort of where this is going to go, I don't know. Right now, the army is in charge. The people are in a very restless, rebellious mood. The UN and Africa Union are stepping in to, I'm not sure what their intentions are. Are they just trying to keep, are they trying to keep the lid on this and sort of have cosmetic changes, or are they really trying to bring some kind of reform? This is one of those sort of the cliche. We just have to wait and see what happens. I really don't know myself. But I think this is a very hopeful sign that the reforms that Sankara took back in the 80s are still remembered by the people. And these are the reforms that Africa needs right now. It doesn't need big agriculture. It doesn't need GMO seeds. It needs small farmers. And a lot of the small farmers are women. It needs more rights for women, which Sankara, there's a big... We hear a lot now about how awful female genital mutilation is, and it is a terrible thing. But it's gone on for years and years. Sankara was one of the people outlawed this back in the 80s. So we'll just have to wait and stay tuned. Meanwhile, let's say a little bit about Ukraine. The rebellion there is still going on. The eastern Ukraine had an election, or a kind of a vote or a plebiscite on independence or their future, and which was promptly declared illegal by the government of Kiev and the West. And but the people there voted overwhelmingly for some kind of freedom from Kiev, possible union with Russia or whatever, and Russia has said it will respect this election, this vote. Didn't say it would back it. I just said it would respect it. And for that, Russia was harshly criticized by the West. Well, what's wrong with respecting a vote? It's like taking an opinion poll in a way. You have to go back to the history of Ukraine. I mean, this is supposedly a nation's, well, it hasn't been a nation state for more than the last 30 or 40 years. Before that, it was always part of somebody's empire. The borders, the actual borders of Ukraine have been sort of been all over the map. If you look at old maps, Ukraine was ruled by the Polish Empire, the Russian Empire, Lithuanian Empire, the Ottoman Empire. I mean, its borders were not even settled until after World War I. And after the Bolshevik Revolution, they created this Soviet Republic of Ukraine and sort of jammed these two. Basically, the Western Ukraine is the real Ukraine. This is where people speak the Ukrainian language, follow Ukrainian customs, such as they are. And they also have some kind of very right-wing leanings with sort of neo-Nazi, pro-Nazi fighters back in World War II. And then you have Eastern Ukraine, which is virtually identical with Russia. And why these two peoples are lumped together in one nation state is really kind of a mystery. It doesn't make any sense at all. When you think about it, if you look at history, you might ask, how did Ukraine get its borders? Well, conquest, political wheeling dealing. You could probably say this about any nation in the world. I can't think of, there's very few nations where borders were just kind of commonly agreed upon by one people and all its neighbors. You might ask, even the United States, how did we get our borders? Originally, our borders were these 13 little colonies along the Atlantic coast, and they became free, and then they sort of became united under a federal government, which some people still dispute. And you look at maps, and these 13 sea colonies along the Atlantic coast extended westward, first to the Mississippi, and they picked up Florida, and then they bought there was a famous Louisiana Purchase, which is kind of like Thomas Jefferson buying stolen goods from France. Apparently, the reason for that was that Napoleon Bonaparte was trying to reconquer Haiti after their successful slave rebellion, and he was not doing too well, and so he decided to unload this claimed property in America. And so Thomas Jefferson bought it. And then they sent Lewis and Clark all the way to Oregon to kind of check it out, see what kind of stolen property they'd acquired. And then, of course, there was a famous war with Mexico, which we grabbed up to half of Mexico, and which leaves us, that's one of the reasons why we have this whole immigration problem today, is that the people didn't change too much, but they changed the borders on the people. And so when you talk about borders, think about how these borders were created. And so you have this in country after country, you have these conflict between what you might call sacred borders and the rights of a free people, self-determination. We see this, you know, in Scotland recently, they had a referendum on independence from the UK, and it lost, but the people had their say. Years ago, not that many years ago, you had a referendum in Quebec. The people there decided to stay with Canada. Now they have a vote in Catalonia, which is the northeastern part of Spain. And there, apparently, the people voted overwhelmingly that they would like independence. I'm not sure if that's what they actually voted on. This election was also called illegal by the Spanish government. And so this happens. Why not have elections like this everywhere in the world? Let people choose their borders rather than have them imposed upon by others. Well, that's where Ukraine is. The latest thing in Ukraine is that they get their gas from Russia, and they haven't been paying their bills, and Russia threatened to cut off their gas supply, which would leave Ukraine kind of cold and freezing in the wintertime. Anyway, apparently a deal was worked out where Europe would lend Ukraine the money to pay its bills. In other words, Russia said, you're not going to get any gas unless you pay what you owe, or sort of pay in advance. Well, Ukraine doesn't have the money because their economy is falling apart. They spent what money they had on weapons to try and put down rebellions in eastern Ukraine. And so Europe came through and sort of lent Ukraine the money to pay Russia, which they will probably never get back. So, in effect, Europe is paying for Ukraine's heating bill. And apparently they don't like it very much. You know, the U.S., sort of with the neocons who have infested Obama's government, have been pushing for war in Ukraine. They might get it now that the Republicans are in charge of Congress. And the West is very – the U.S. is very – happy to say yes, let's fight for Ukraine's so-called freedom, and the Europeans wind up paying for it. They wind up suffering because of economic sanctions, which hurt them as much as they hurt Russia. So we will just see how that one goes. One final little bit of news is that Saudi Arabia has had its 61st beheading of the year 2014. There's a place in Riyadh called Chop Chop Square. That's not its official name. It's just what it's called. That's where they do these public beheadings. And things must be very busy in Chop Chop Square these days. 61 beheadings, although I have to say they're not all done in Riyadh. Some are done in other cities. But we hear a lot about this Islamic State and how brutal they are. Well, think of our friends, the Saudis, who are every bit as brutal and every bit as united as the Islamic State. So we will leave you with that, and let's stay tuned to see what happens in Burkina Faso, because it's a very important story that has not been talked about very much. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Pear. Fight the Empire on KBOO Portland, 1 minute now before 10 o'clock. Join us in 15 minutes for Flashpoints Investigative News Journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. Today we'll hear about feeding the homeless and getting arrested for it. Plus, we'll get an update on Palestine from the Electronic Intifada. At 11 on Between the Covers, we'll hear host David Naiman speak with writer William Gibson about his new novel, The Peripheral, a science fiction murder mystery that spans centuries. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with host Patricia Walsh. Today's guest is Ezra Greenspan, author of the book William Wells Brown, An American Life. That's all coming up after Air Cascadia, which is next with host Chris Andre. Stick around. Thank you, KBOO listeners, for your continued support for your community radio station. If you haven't yet made your commitment to non-commercial community radio, you can still donate by browsing on over to our website, kboo.fm, and clicking on the tip jar.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor My Name is Rachel Corey, a play based on the diaries and letters of an activist killed in 2003 when she was acting as a human shield between an Israeli bulldozer and a Palestinian home. My Name is Rachel Corey shows on Sunday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel of the First Unitarian Church, 1034 Southwest 13th Avenue in Portland. There will be a discussion following the play with Cindy and Craig Corey, the actress and the producer. Again, that's My Name is Rachel Corey, Sunday, November 9th, 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel of the First Unitarian Church in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.